Is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yeah, baby, here we are. Glad to be with you this afternoon here on the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us today on this, Thursday afternoon, I guess. Hope you're having a good one today, whether you're at work, some of you office folks there in your cubicles, sitting there listening on the internet, thank you. And to all you folks at home, thank you. Well, glad to have all of you along with us today. We've got a good show for you today. We've got a controversial show, to be sure. And I know a lot of you are going to be interested in it. Many people have been asking for us to discuss the subject we're going to approach today. And so the day is here. We're going to do it. We're going to have Clint Curtis. He is the gentleman that's running for the 26th District out of Florida against Tom Feeney. If you'll remember, Clint Curtis is the gentleman who is claiming that Feeney came to him and asked him to design a program more or less to hack a black box voting machine so that they could get away with it without anybody knowing it back during the 2000 election. And he has an interesting story to tell. And as far as I can see, and I've done a lot of research on it, I can't find any holes in his story. That's the thing. Can't find any holes in his story at all. Anyway, he's been besmirched by these other folks across the aisle. And I might add, he went to, was a Republican all of his life, but he's running as a Democrat against Feeney. And he needs your support. He's going to be on here today talking about exactly what happened. There's intrigue, there's adventure, everything in this story. And then following up with him, and we're going to continue on with that line of story that actually with the story about the black box voting with Brad Friedman of Brad Blog. And I know everybody knows who Brad is. Brad's done extensive work and investigation on this subject. So we have an interesting program for you today. And those of you that have questions about it, I hope you'll give us a call. Let us know what those questions are. 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254. And also would like you to visit Clint Curtis's website while you're at it. Why don't you do that right now? ClintCurtis.com. ClintCurtis.com. And you can read all about Clint there. And, of course, you can go to Brad Blog and find out, and Raw Story, and find out all about the saga, you might say, of Clint Curtis and what all has happened and transpired over these last, how many years now? Almost 6 years since this took place. My God. So, interesting story for you today. And, of course, we can't do a story about this without remembering our good friend Andy Stevenson. Andy passed away, it's been a year now, I suppose. I don't have the date marked down. I'm not good with dates. But Andy was a dear, dear friend, and we all missed him. And he did a lot of work on the black box voting issue. Bev Harris did a lot of work on the black box voting issue. Been a lot of people looking around with it. And as you know, hard-headed me, I've never been a skeptic that it happened. I've always just been one of those that says, you know, show me, bring me the proof, and then I'll crow about it. And I must say, I've I've done enough reading and investigation of my own here finally now that, especially with this Clint Curtis affair, that I think, well, I think there's a lot to it. I think there's a lot to it, a whole lot to it. And it's up to us to make sure it doesn't happen again. Hey, I'm going to do something a little different than I normally do and normally start off with a little monologue on the program. Today, let's just take a phone call right off the bat. Hello, who's with us?
This is Dave, and I'm going to call you later, but I wanted to let you know that your stream is being disrupted every 20 seconds.
Oh, well, I wouldn't know why.
Well, I would.
It looks like everything, all the bells and whistles here are working okay. It might be on your end.
They might be doing it just to me here.
Okay.
I'll call you back.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Well, I hope it's not a problem. All the gauges and whistles and bells and whistles and everything in your studio look just fine today. So hope we're streaming okay. Appears that we are. This black box voting issue is something we need to take a good hard look at. And I believe, and as you know, the Democratic Party has been completely unwilling to take a stand on the issue of black box voting. You haven't heard anything about it out of the party, out of any officials in the party. And not only the Democrats, but the entire government has really been reluctant to address this fraud because of the fear that if these past two elections are proven to be frauds, where does that leave us? I mean, the American voter will start to question whether previous elections were equally fraudulent, and if that happens, that is going to be a huge problem for both parties. And I really think this issue is so critical that one has to wonder why it's not at the forefront of every political discussion. Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, Green, it really doesn't matter. All the American voters are at the risk of someday realizing that they didn't actually vote their government into office, but that the government was in fact stolen. Yes, stolen by those who've had their reasons to deceive the American public, and those reasons usually involve power and money. Isn't that always the case? And, you know, I think Americans just might figure out that they've been taxed without any representation, that we have had no say over this disastrous military policy and the failed fiscal policies that we've had. You'll never convince me that the majority of the American people have agreed with most of what's been going on in this Bush administration. I will never, never, never accept that the majority of the people have been behind him on what he's done. Never could I be convinced of that. But, you know, the really serious part of all this is what happens if the American voters find out that the elections have indeed been rigged. What happens? Do those voters then still have the obligation to obey government laws, surrender their money for taxes and their kids to the military for, you know, a bunch of unelected thugs? Is that what would happen? Think about it. I can't remember the exact phrase, but I think it was Joseph Stalin who said, "Those who cast the votes decide nothing. Those who count the votes decide everything." I think that's how it went. And it couldn't have been more true. But at the present time, we're really unsure of who's counting the votes. And especially after you hear what Clint Curtis has to say today, I'm especially unsure of who's counting the votes. And you know, a democracy has everything riding on a fair election. And there's plenty of reason to believe that the past two elections have been anything but fair. And yet the average voter just doesn't seem to be the slightest bit interested in this subject. I mean, you know, you and I'd consider all of us that participate in this program every day and some of the other programs, we're activists. We're interested. We know these things. We make it our business to find out. But it just doesn't seem like the average voter cares that much. And, you know, really what's happening here, it'd be the same thing. I'm trying to think of an analogy of some kind. Let's say you went down to your local Ford dealer and you ordered a brand new Ford because you like Fords. And so they call you and you tell you your car's in, and you run down there to get your new Ford, and it's a brand new Chevrolet. Now, you've never been fond of Chevrolets. That's why you ordered a Ford. But you end up taking the Chevy anyway. And that's kind of the same with the way the voting's been going. You voted for the candidate you wanted. He most likely won the election. But instead, you got a brand new Bush delivered to you. And you said, oh, well, I don't want any muss and fuss, so I'll just keep this one. You know, it's a very simple, very elementary analogy, to be sure. But it is indicative of what happened in these last two elections. You know it is. I have never trusted electronic voting machines. They will never convince me. I don't think they'll ever convince a lot of people that they're safe, that they're tamper-proof, they can't be rigged. And that's not to say the old-fashioned ballot box couldn't be rigged. We know that has happened in the past. We know it's happened. But with close scrutiny, you can make sure that that doesn't happen with the old-fashioned paper ballots. With the new black box voting machines, who knows? And I just don't know how we can ever trust the results of another election when we know that there's these huge faults with the black box voting machines. And among those faults is the fact that some unscrupulous poll workers can manipulate them to say something different than what the voters said with their votes. And the really mystifying part of all this is the public is so ho-hum on this matter. And I guess when it boils down to it, the American public kind of deserves this kind of leadership if they aren't going to speak out against voter fraud. And it's going to happen again this coming election. You mark my word. It will. They're not going to give up on this very easily. Who knows what Blackwell's got planned up in Ohio? Who knows what he might do? I don't trust him any farther than I can throw him. So, where do we go from here? I would love to see a great groundswell of voters come up and say, hey, let's just throw the damn things in the ocean and let's go back to the good old ballot box. That's what I'd like to see. I can wait a day or two to get the election results. I really can. I'd love to get them the same night and all that. And we Americans are so impatient. That's how we are. But I can wait. I can especially wait knowing that I'm going to get a fair count with people from both sides monitoring the votes, the good old paper ballots as they come out of the box, instead of wondering. Somebody in the back room somewhere, some sinister plan, has someone hijacking the vote. That worries me. It really does. And I know it worries a lot of you, too. And we're going to discuss it throughout the program today. And if you've got any questions about it, give us a call, 866-546-5254. And I would like to take just a moment and thank some folks for helping out with the program. I appreciate it so very much. Just start off with Virginia and Elaine Miller. They live out in Iowa. And Leslie Alexander, Bill Taylor, Charles Roberts, Susan Novat, John Roberts, Elizabeth Dawson, Eric Peterson, Georgia Russell, David Birch, Catherine O'Hara, Lawrence Nader, International Transcription. Who else do we have on here? Jim Lyman, Kelly Messina, Gary Kuna, Bill Allen, Jeff Hales, Teresa Avalon, Donna Greathouse, Patrick Stinky, Terrence Winecoop, Robert DeVeo. I think I already said Tim Lyman. We're so grateful to all of you folks for helping keeping this program up and running. I do appreciate it very much. And if I missed anybody, I'm sorry. I tried to go over the list as much as I could there. We'll give you another list in another day or two. But thank you to all you folks for helping support this program. I think it's important work we do. I think we've had some fruits come from this program when we're on the regular terrestrial radio. Lee and Collier County, Southwest Florida, had a tremendous increase and Democratic voters. And I know we played a small part in that, whatever part, I don't know. But we're happy to be of service to Democrats. And it's good to have all of you along listening to the program today. Let's stop and take a little break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
It's a lie. If it's not fair, then people die. We should have known better, but we got in too deep. We should have known better, but we let it all go. We should have known better, but we walk in our sleep. Are we never to remember the mistakes we repeat? What we sow is what we reap. Somebody tell me it's over, and this is only a dream. Somebody tell me it's over, things aren't as bad as they seem. What do you say to the family? Children lay in memories. Why wouldn't you listen when we march in the streets? Why wouldn't you listen when the world prayed for peace? You never had a feeling for the fathers and sons, but you couldn't wait for the inspectors to come. Or until your war had begun. Somebody tell me it's over, and this is all.
Oh, yeah, it's been a big, long nightmare, hasn't it? I wish it were over. I wish Mr. Bush and his crew would just quietly fade away. That'd be a good thing. Nothing came of the Karl Rove incident yesterday, testifying in front of the grand jury once again. We don't know. We just don't know what happened. Is he off the hook, or is he really on it now? It's one or the other. You can bet he's either cleared that they can't find enough on him, or you can bet they're going to nail him, one or the other. It's no in between right now, I don't think. Was this five times in front of the grand jury? You just don't go five times in front of the grand jury unless you are a target. And I think he knows full well he is the target. And it's funny to see how his lawyer, was it Ruskin is his name, how they've danced around and parsed words over this whole thing about how they didn't get a letter and a target letter and all that sort of thing. Going to be fascinating to see how it turns out. 866-546-5254. Had one of our faithful listeners send me something. I always like to get a good quote every day, and I love great quotes. And this one's by a man who I've studied considerably, but I never heard this quote from him. It's by Bertrand Russell. And the quote is, "The whole problem with the world is that fools and fanatics are always so certain of themselves, and wiser people so full of doubts." Ain't it the truth? That's the whole world. The whole problem with the world is that fools and fanatics are always so certain of themselves, and wiser people so full of doubts. That why Junior Bush thinks that's why he's so certain. Stay the course. Fools and fanatics. He might fit both of those categories, fools and fanatics. I'm pretty sure he does. Hey, I think I got time to get this in before the bottom of the hour. Somebody sent me this article. It's by Paul Craig Roberts, who was, I think he was Assistant Secretary of the Treasury during the Reagan administration. I think I've got that right. Either Assistant Secretary of the Treasury or Assistant Secretary of State, one or the other. But Paul Craig Roberts, and he is a Republican. And I think he wrote a great piece here, and I've got permission to read it, and I'm going to. Is the United States a superpower? I think not. Consider these facts. The financial position of the U.S. has declined dramatically. The U.S. is heavily indebted, both government and consumers. The U.S. trade deficit, both in absolute size and as a percentage of GDP, is unprecedented, reaching more than $800 billion in 2005, and accumulating to $4.5 trillion since 1990. With U.S. job growth falling behind population growth, and with no growth in consumer real incomes, the U.S. economy is driven by expanding consumer debt. Saving rates are low or negative. The federal budget is deep in the red, adding to America's dependency on debt. The U.S. cannot even go to war unless foreigners are willing to finance it. Now, there's a sobering thought. He goes on to say, our biggest bankers are China and Japan, both of whom could cause the U.S. serious financial problems if they wished. A country whose financial affairs are in the hands of foreigners is not a superpower. The U.S. is heavily dependent on imports for manufactured goods, including advanced technology products. In 2005, U.S. dependency in dollar amounts on imported manufactured goods was twice as large as U.S. dependency on imported oil. And in the 21st century, the U.S. has experienced a rapid increase in dependency on imports of advanced technology products. A country dependent on foreigners for manufactures and advanced technology products is not a superpower. Because of jobs offshoring and illegal immigration, U.S. consumers create jobs for foreigners, not for Americans. Bureau of Labor Statistics job reports documents the loss of manufacturing jobs and the inability of the U.S. economy to create jobs in categories other than domestic hands-on services, according to a March 2006 report from the Center for Immigration Studies. Most of these jobs are going to immigrants. Between March 2000 and March 2005, only 9% of the net increase in jobs for adults from ages 18 to 64 went to natives. This is striking because natives accounted for 61% of the net increase in the overall size of the 18 to 64-year-old population, and yet they ended up with only 9% of the increase in jobs. A country that cannot create jobs for its native-born population is not a superpower. In an interview in the April 17th Manufacturing and Technology News, former TCI and Global Crossing CEO Leo Hendry said that the incentives of globalization have disconnected U.S. corporations from U.S. interests. No economy, Hendry said, can survive the offshoring of both manufacturing and services concurrently. In fact, no society can even take excessive offshoring of manufacturing alone. According to Hendry, offshoring services serves the short-term interest of the shareholders and executive pay at the long-term expense of U.S. economic strength. What an article. It goes on to say that in 1981, the Business Roundtable defined its constituency as employees, shareholders, community, customers, and the nation. Today, the constituency is quarterly earnings. A country whose business class has no sense of the nation is not a superpower. By launching a war of aggression on the basis of lies and fabricated intelligence, the Bush regime violated the Nuremberg Standard established by the U.S. and international law. Extensive civilian casualties and infrastructure destruction in Iraq, along with the torture of detainees in concentration camps and an ever-changing excuse for the war, have destroyed the soft power and moral leadership that provided the diplomatic foundation for America's superpower status. A country that is no longer respected or trusted and which promises yet more war isolates itself from cooperation from the rest of the world. An isolated country is not a superpower. A country that fears small, distant countries to such an extent that it utilizes military in place of diplomatic means is not a superpower. The entire world knows that the U.S. is not a superpower when its entire available military force is tied down by a small, lightly armed insurgency drawn from a population of a mere 5 million people. Neoconservatives think the U.S. is a superpower because of its military, weapons, and nuclear missiles. However, as the Iraqi resistance has demonstrated, America's superior military firepower is not enough to prevail in fourth-generation warfare. The Bush regime has reached the conclusion itself, which is why it increasingly speaks of attacking Iran with nuclear weapons. The U.S. is the only country to have used nuclear weapons against an opponent. If six decades after nuking Japan, the U.S. again resorts to the use of nuclear weapons, it will establish itself as a pariah war criminal state under the control of insane people. Any sympathy that might still exist for the U.S. would immediately disappear, and the world would unite against America. The country against which the world is united is not a superpower. This coming from a lifelong Republican, a member of the Reagan administration, and a very sobering piece indeed. I know that's a lengthy piece, but I think it's something that everybody needs to absorb, most certainly. We're going to take a moment to get a hold of our guest, and we'll be back just as soon as we can.
Hey, life. They lied, they took us for a ride. Tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lied, but no matter what they tried to hide. Sing and shout, the truth wins out. Everybody knows they lied. I ain't telling you nothing you don't already know, but the government's been lying to you, Joe. They're shaking your hand while showing you the door to a foreign land so you can fight them poor, where every Arab is a terrorist and they're hiding weapons that don't exist. You can join a coalition of willing nations willing to kill civilians for the corporations. They lied, they lied, they took us for a ride. Tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lied, they lied, but no matter what they tried to hide, sing and shout, the truth wins out. Everybody knows they lie. Tonight is the night that you give up your rights to the Patriot Act and the perilous fight. But you won't remember which country you're in when you wake up in the morning by the dawn's early light. If it reminds you of the Third Reich, you better keep quiet. If you don't like, better watch your backs, cover your tracks, cause you're paying for it all with your federal tax. They lie, they lie, they took us for a ride. Tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lied, they lied, but no matter what they tried to hide, sing and shout, truth wins out. Everybody knows they lied. Now come on, did you see that?
presidential smirk. Say, don't look now, it's Captain Kirk. He's an arrogant jerk, though likable too. But the Federation's been lying to you. The Federation, the corporation, is supposed to be public radio station. They're violating the neutral zone to promote the imperial corporate nation. Blow up Afghanistan, nuke Iraq. They got the biggest phasers on the block. We're the world's policemen around the clock. You got the comm now, Mr. Spock. To the victors go the spoils. The lithium crystals, petroleum oil. They hate our freedom for no good reason. Arabs and Klingons, it's open season. They lied, they lied. They took us for a ride. Tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lied. They lied, but no matter what they tried to hide, sing and shout, the truth wins out. Everybody knows they lied.
Oh, yeah, I think you got the message, and I think everybody knows that by now, do we not? Oh, yes. I promised you, starting yesterday, longer than yesterday, we're going to have a gentleman on the program that would prove to be a fascinating interview, and someone we've been looking forward to talking to. A very interesting story, and right now we have Mr. Clint Curtis on the line. Clint, are you with us?
I'm with you, sir.
Yeah, very good to have you along with us this afternoon here in the Guy James Show. We've heard a lot about you, and a lot of our listeners have followed your story, and some of them have not. And if you would take a moment and tell us about yourself, how you ended up running for the 24th Congressional District.
Well, as you said, right now I am running for Congress against a person named Tom Feeney in the 24th District in Florida. And my history with Feeney is kind of long and sordid, I guess you could say. Back in 2000, I was actually working with Mr. Feeney at another company down in Oviedo, Florida, and that's where basically the whole story began. So, it was 2000, and I was working for a company called Yang Enterprises, technology company. We do or did all kinds of contracts for NASA, ExxonMobil, Florida Department of Transportation, Florida Department of Law Enforcement, you know, all that sort of thing.
And what did they do for them? What did they do for these companies?
Software.
Software.
Usually prototyping.
Okay.
We did some finished products, but usually it's a prototyping type event. For NASA, it was it's called Maximo, and basically it was coordinating all of their work orders into a single database so that it was automating who got contacted and who didn't and when things need to be done. And basically everything that went on at NASA was ran through a database, a central computer.
Okay.
So anyway, that's what we did. So at the same time I am working there as, you know, basically the head programmer, there's another fellow there called Tom Feeney, and he was our corporate attorney, our head lobbyist, and incoming Speaker of the Florida House. Very cozy relationship there.
Yes.
So his job, as you can guess, was to basically come in and feed his contracts. He would come in and tell us what they were thinking about doing or what was on the table, and then see if we could do them and, you know, help the owner of the company bid the contract.
So, and your district's actually right up there at Titusville and Cape Canaveral and all that in that area, right?
Yes, we are. Basically, there's four counties. There's Brevard, Orange, Seminole, and Volusia, but it's little pieces carved out of each one, so it's
sure.
Not complete.
Okay.
So it's between Daytona and Melbourne, not including either one of those, and Orlando, just taking a little tiny chunk out of it. So
all right.
So it's a weirdly drawn district. As I think they all are.
But. Yes, indeed.
So anyway, when I first met him, you know, I was a Republican and the company was all Republican. And so, you know, I thought we were the good guys. And he came in and he requested a prototype for a vote fraud program. Basically, an election fraud program where you could go in and go up to a touchscreen. He wanted a touchscreen capable, no third party items. You didn't have to bring in a keyboard or a hacked card or anything else. Just go up to the screen, touch the screen in the right places, and determine who you wanted to win an election.
I hope you don't mind if I interrupt now and then, because I want to lay this out as succinctly and just transparent as possible here. He comes to you, Tom Feeney does, and he's about to be president of the Senate of Florida.
Oh, it was in the House, actually. He was
in the House. All right. and he's the attorney for this company that you work for, and he comes to you and asks you to come up with a program that will cause people not to know that this machine has been monkeyed with.
Correct. Basically, flip the votes, undetectable, the voter will never know.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty straightforward, right?
Yeah, I think so.
But see, you're more skeptical than I am. I thought, you know, Republicans were the good guys at that point. So, because, you know, I grew up in Illinois, and in Illinois it was always Democrats were in trouble.
near Chicago anywhere? Yeah, Mr. Daley, okay.
Yes, it was, you know, where there was vote fraud there, too. So I assumed, and at 2000, Clinton was in office. You know, this was before the complete takeover of the government. So I assumed that he had knowledge that the Democrats were up to something, and he wanted to cut it off at the pass kind of thing. So, you know, you create things in computers to make sure that they work. You break things to fix them.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you perfect it. So, you know, he wanted those things, and I said, okay, well, we can't. He also wanted to be able to hide the manipulation in the source code. Specifically asked for that. So this was something he thought about, because most people don't know what source code is and that sort of thing, which is actually the instructions, the human-readable instructions that the programmer puts into the computer, and the computer changes into binary so it can understand it.
All right, so I got this right so far. This fellow comes to you. He's a high-powered attorney and legislator
Jeff
here
Bush
in Florida.
Running mate the first time.
Yeah, and he comes along, and he's asking you to do your patriotic duty and keep the dirty Democrats from stealing the election.
Well, you see, he never said that. He just blatantly said, this is what I want.
All right, okay.
I just guessed that part on my own.
You guessed it,
so,
all right.
I filled in the blanks, you know, to make things
well, better. I can understand where you were coming from, okay, yeah.
Right, because, you know, this was pre-everything that's gone on since then, so, you know, I just didn't pay that close of attention, and it's like, okay.
Well, you just wouldn't think he'd ask you to do anything illegal.
Right.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
Doesn't seem right. Anyway,
no.
So I build the program, write it all up on, you know, what you would do to stop election fraud. You know, you would need to have some sort of a paper ballot that is printed out that you can actually audit against the machine, you know, do a random audit against the machine. You would make sure that you could see the source code, you know, blind source code. Who's going to let you use that anyway? And basically, if you have those two simple elements, you can't get away with it. It's impossible, because all you've got to do is audit the machines. You know, it's real simple. If it does get past the source code inspection, which it can, because, you know, you could hide some things if people weren't looking very closely, or if you did a little switch and said, here's my source code, but unless you compiled it yourself, you don't really know if it is.
Well, am I wrong in thinking that, and I can't get too technical, because let me explain, first of all, I'm a complete bozo. We're really lucky here that I'm running the electronic equipment we're talking over, but monkey see, monkey do is how I learned it. But what most people don't realize, it's my impression is that most people don't realize that no one other than these somewhat obscure voting machine vendors can examine the source codes. Am I right in that?
Exactly. That is what's really crazy, is they say that it's proprietary and they're the only ones who are allowed to see this code.
And how do they justify that?
Because they can.
Okay.
Because the same companies that write voting machine software also write bank software.
All right.
Banks would not let you put software in unless they examine everything and they have an auditability to it, so they can check to make sure that your computer isn't diverting 2 or 3 cents for every account into some foreign bank account.
All right.
So, I mean, it's just a crazy...
And being proprietary is so nobody else can steal their ideas as well.
That's what they're saying. Even though a voting machine could count the one, that's all a voting machine does. It takes the vote that the voter voted, adds that to the total that they have. That should be the extent of the software that's designed.
All right.
It's not really rocket science.
Well, it would be to me, but he's come to you and he's
taking
asked
a bean and throwing it in a pot.
Yeah.
That's what it should be doing.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I gave it to the owner. I said, "Here you go," and this is how you stop it, and everything, you know. It's real simple. And she says, you don't understand. In order to get this contract, we have to hide the manipulation of the source code. This is for controlling the vote in South Florida. Just that blatant.
Oh. Well, she could trust you.
Well, she thought she could.
Yeah.
There was a long history there where, you know, she thought I was, you know, the golden-haired boy and everything. And so she thought that, I guess, because I was a Republican and fairly outspoken about that, she thought that, you know, I guess all Republicans were alike and were crooked. And that really isn't the case.
No, this isn't any rinky-dink company, is it?
Not that big, but not that small. It has about 300 employees over at NASA. It has several hundred at other military bases.
Well, you're talking about millions, what, hundreds of millions of dollars in contracts a year?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh,
okay. So, we're not talking about Ma and Paul down on the corner.
No.
All right.
It's bigger than that, but, you know, it's not ExxonMobil, although...
Yeah.
We had contracts with ExxonMobil.
Mm-hmm. And the CEO of this company, Mrs. Yang,
mm-hmm.
she tells you just this flat out what this is really for.
Yes.
What did you think at that moment?
Well, I told her that's absolutely crazy. First of all, it's illegal. And second of all, nobody's going to let you get away with it. The only way to pull it off is for somebody to be absolutely stupid enough to let you put this on their machine without any way of checking its accuracy. In other words, you have no paper, you have nothing, you just have to trust that they're going to give you the right total.
Well, let me ask you, wouldn't the local election board, would they know any difference if you went to the machines and did that?
No, because it's all internal. In fact, you could have every election supervisor standing behind the voter watching him as he flipped the vote, and they would not know it occurred.
Oh.
It's simply touching hidden buttons on the screen that they don't see.
All right.
And there is no feedback that says, you know, a big pop-up box that says, you have successfully flipped the vote. It's just, it's all behind the scenes.
Okay, well, it's obvious by now. You didn't say, okay, Mrs. Yang, I'll just do this and I'll get this done and we'll get away with it. You didn't do that.
No. So once I found out, and there were other times, you know, other meetings, I found out how ethically challenged Tom Feeney actually was. You know, he bragged in 2000, there weren't touchscreen machines in Florida, and he was bragging about his voter exclusion lists and setting up police patrols to reduce the minority vote.
And we've heard all about these, and
to election manipulation, that's where he is. So.
Well, I must tell you before I go any farther, I have a close relative who was very high up in the Clinton administration, and I'm not going to say who she is because I don't want to cause her any embarrassment, but she had a very important job in the Clinton administration, and when all this was going on about counting the votes and the hanging chads and all this, I asked her what could be done, and she said, nothing. It's over. It's done with. There's nothing that can be done. The fix is in, and she somehow knew it was, and it turned out that it was. I don't know. So anyway, Mrs. Yang, and you had did Feeney sit in on any of these meetings?
Well, he was the one who requested the software. The
mm-hmm.
other thing was just a handoff of the I built the prototype for, handed it to her with the explanation of how you prevent vote fraud, and for me that was done because I assumed no one would let them use it. I mean, they definitely couldn't use it in the fashion I gave it to them because it was only. They could steal the code off of course, and make it multiple elections. But what I gave them just showed them the math and how to do it.
All right.
It wasn't the full functional voting machine.
So what happened then?
Well, then I had to find a new job because they were into all sorts of things. They were basically, it was a terrible place. Terrible place. They were into espionage. You know, it took me 4 years, but finally. They raided one of the people. They raided the supervisor of the... He basically oversaw all of the programming operation
mm-hmm.
at the Oviedo office, and so all of the code that went out of Oviedo's office to all these bases and government agencies went through him. Turns out he was shipping military technology to communist China. Well, he was Chinese. He wasn't even a legal alien.
Oh.
It was illegal. So we were also downloading tons of information from NASA, and Mrs. Yang was handing it over to him and he walking out the door with it. So, and at the time, I didn't think anything of it because, you know, it was all pre-9/11 and who really believes, you know, about the spies and all. You know, it was kind of James Bondish.
Well, but you have heard all these stories about how the Republicans have been accusing Bill Clinton of selling his soul to the Chinese.
Well, I think it's the other way around.
All right.
The other way around. It's another one of those, you do it so you claim the other guy did.
Okay.
Because Tom Feeney has sold everything to the Chinese. Let him walk out, you know. And even after I reported him, he came out publicly and backed up this company where the spy was working and where the owner of the company, Mrs. Yang, her brother had been thrown out of the country for spying. But he came out, backed them up. They still have top security clearance. They still have access to NASA.
Now, one of them was, what, convicted and fined for this. Am I wrong there?
Yes. He admitted to sending Hellfire missile cap technology to Communist China at least 20 times, which would get you about 100 years in prison and $1 million fine or so. Probably a minimum, you get deported.
Uh-huh. And he got?
He got a $50 fine and did not even get deported, did not do any time. Basically, I went back and talked to him after the fact, and he said, according to the court papers, he got a $100 fine. He told me it was dropped to 50, and he didn't even have to pay that. It was taken care of.
And this was...
As long as he keeps his mouth shut, he gets a green card.
In federal court?
Yes.
Oh.
In Orlando. So.
Oh.
So we have some issues down here we have to address.
Well, there's not anything Feeney can say to you about slander or anything else, because what you're saying, well, right here, this man, you claim this man was involved in this, and he was actually fined and convicted of it.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Tom Feeney sat next to the guy at the company Christmas party in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. So he is in deep. In fact, if you go to Feeney's FEC website where he has registered his campaign committee,
mm-hmm.
It is registered in the same building in Yang Enterprises where the spy worked.
I see.
But he's blatant about this. He doesn't even care because he knows he has the elections pretty much in the bag.
Now, Clint, you'll forgive me, I hope, because this is a story so far, and we've just gotten a little bit into it, that just puts a person back on their heels. I mean, it's like this can't have happened.
And, sounds like crazy talk, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Is that why? Well, let me ask you a question, and I hope I don't interrupt you too much. I'll try and keep this going in a straight line here. Have you been on any Republican shows, talk shows, and explained all this?
No, they don't really want to talk to me.
Oh.
Very odd. You would think they'd want to rip into me and prove why I'm wrong and the whole routine.
Yeah, I think that's O'Reilly would get you on, or Hannity. Hannity should invite you on and just tear you to shreds.
He should. They should just tear me up. But you have issues here, you know, such as the fact the guy was convicted of spying. You have issues such as the fact that I took a polygraph, and in this campaign, we are publicly challenging Tom Feeney to take one with us. So in a public forum, you know, him and me sitting on chairs in the front of the crowd, and we can address these issues, so we can find out.
Well, to clear his good name, he'll probably do it, won't he?
Well, you would, huh? Wouldn't you?
I think I know the answer to that question.
The problem, of course, is can you clear your good name if your needle's jumping all over the screen?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So he'll probably choose a different course, but I don't know what that's going to be.
All right,
only
so
to just outspend us into oblivion. So,
you've told Mrs. Yang that you've decided to yourself that I got to get out of here.
Great.
What did you do then? Were you ever looking over your shoulder, thinking the feds would be raiding the place any day? I mean,
I thought they'd go to jail. I mean, they were talking about Feeney was just—he is absolutely insane. I don't know if you. You probably don't know too much about him. But
I know enough about him that, yeah.
He is mouthy. He doesn't keep his mouth shut. And when he thinks he's among, you know, fellow crooks, he's really mouthy. You know, he was talking about the invasion of Iraq.
Yeah.
Iraq, Iran, and Syria back in 2000. Even before Bush was in office, he was talking about, you know, we could invade them, or we're going to invade them, we're going to take their oil, because they don't have any weapons and they don't have any friends.
Right.
You know.
Well, and he's a good friend of Tommy DeLay, too, so. All right.
He is indeed, in fact.
All right. Well, at this point, you decided you've got to get out of this mess. What did you do?
Well, knowing that they were powerful and crazy, I turned and noticed that this is a great place to work, but I have a better job offer. I'm have to leave. You know, I really hate it, of course.
Yeah.
Because I like working with complete crooks, but I've got to get out of here. So, you know, I turned and noticed, and instead of leaving in 2 weeks, because there are 2 week notice, of course, I ended up having to stick around for 8 weeks because they couldn't find a replacement for me.
All right. You weren't fired. They didn't tell you to get out, Clint. We don't want you anymore.
No. In fact, they threw a party for me, you know, saying, come back anytime. If things don't work out, doors always open, you know.
Are they saying this now that we loved Clint and hated to see him leave?
Well, when I first came out with it and they were getting, you know, people were calling them on it, they were saying, he's a disgruntled employee. That's all there is. Just a disgruntled employee, so just making this up. But oddly enough, I had saved that card, which is kind of abnormal. I don't usually save cards or things, but, you know, I stuck it in a pocket, and that's where it sat. So, you know, I had the card with, you know, the owner of the company saying, you know, come back anytime, doors always open, and all this. So that kind of went away. So after that, they just kind of said, well, we don't remember him too much.
All right. So you got it.
Because he couldn't even remember meeting me.
So you went out and got another job.
Went out and got another job. Actually went up to Tallahassee to meet with somebody who said they could find me a job if I ever needed one. And he had quit, of all things. But since he quit, his job was open.
Uh-huh.
So I picked up that job, and that's where I found out that not only, you know, did they have illegal aliens working for them and, you know, sending military technology and NASA technology to communist China, they were defrauding the vote, but they were also ripping off the government on the contracts. They were just billing them like crazy.
Mm.
And so, you know, that's when I filed the information with the Attorney General's office. Actually, it was at each department, you have like a little baby in Attorney General's office, Inspector General's
Inspector
office.
General.
Department.
Right. That was going to lead to my next question.
Yes.
There was an Inspector General involved in this, right?
Yes. Right.
And can you tell us a little bit about that situation?
Well, we started out, you know, I filed all the information with him, and he said, okay, we'll work on this, and this, and I'll hand everything off. I'll hand the NASA stuff off. I'll hand the vote fraud stuff off to everybody. Whoever needs it, I'll take care of it. Just let me handle it. Which is fine, you know, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You see a burglary, you call the cops, you don't then try and hunt the criminals down, you just figure it's done. So we handed it off, nothing happens. And at the same time I went up, you know, because it was an overbilling situation with the state of Florida, the contract manager for DOT, who worked for DOT, and also saw this issue, but until I could fill in the blanks for him, couldn't really put it together, she went up and filed the information with me. So instead of working on the Yang case, they start harassing her.
Mm-hmm.
Basically because Tom Feeney and his buddy who was head of the technology office, who Yang would call and he would come running down, Roy Kales, were putting pressure on DOT to attack us rather than, you know, do their job and go after the criminals.
Sure.
So they pretty much blew it off. Eventually, you know, I kept harassing them because that's what I do. And they fired both me and the contract manager, name of Serge Ellis, same day, and said, you know, we don't need you anymore. So we filed whistleblower suits. Mine got filed late because the attorney wasn't paying attention. And hers, she was successful, got a big settlement, you know, the whole routine. So, but the guy who was working on it, even after we were fired, he would come visit me because getting fired by these high-profile people is not really a great career move.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
So I ended up stocking shelves in the dollar store. Only job I could find. So he would come into this dollar store and continue to work on this case, asking me questions about, you know, names and companies and vote fraud and spies and on and on and on. His name was Ray Lemmy. And so this went on for a while. And about mid-June-ish, he came in and said, you know, I've tracked this corruption all the way to the top. You know, I've got everything figured out here. We're going to pop this wide open. Just keep your ears open a couple weeks. You'll be thrilled with the results. So, you know, I told him that he might want to, like, tell other people and spread this information out because he's dealing with, you know, big people.
Yeah.
You know, you're dealing with crooked politicians and you're dealing with communist spies. Neither one are going to take kindly to being, you know, outed.
Right.
He wouldn't actually tell me what particular issues he's dealing with. It, you know, was very cop-like.
Very sensitive. Okay.
I'll ask you the questions. You give me the answers, and I'll tell you nothing, kind of thing.
Right. Right.
So, 1st of July, 2 weeks later, he ends up dead in a motel room in Georgia, and that was the end of his investigation.
Nobody followed up.
No.
And I
in fact, in the hotel room where he was supposedly a suicide. That's what they ruled it. In Georgia, you don't have to have an autopsy. They did not. So they cremated him and put him in the ground.
Wow.
And they said they lost the pictures.
Lost the pictures.
The camera failed. No, the camera failed. You know how it happens.
Yeah, well, it happens a lot, yeah.
Stuff happens. Anyway, so the camera failed, and then later some reporter, some web reporter, I can't remember his name right now, he actually had contacts with the Valdosta Police Department, and lo and behold, he found the pictures. And they don't necessarily match the police report. So,
wow.
But that's all online, and
yeah,
you want to
yeah.
look at the pictures and dig into it yourself. It's on the Brad blog, and you can go check that out.
Yeah, Brad's going to be with us a little later on today.
Then I bet you he'll tell you about it.
Oh, I bet you he will. Clint, what are you doing now? You're running for Congress, of course.
Running for Congress against Tom Feeney. We're going to get it on the open because basically there's been pretty much, even though the blogs have covered it a lot and some small attempts at, you know, getting it off into corporate media, but, you know, not real successful. The newspapers in this area that started to cover it, Feeney pounced on him early and said, you know, well, we're going to file all these lawsuits against you for covering this story.
Sure.
And even though you can't win a lawsuit because it's the First Amendment that reporting a story, the little papers can't afford that.
Right, right.
So they just back off.
Basically,
the media's kind of controlled in that regard.
How much has he got you outfunded in the campaign?
Oh, well, you know.
10 to 1, 100 to 1?
Yeah, 10 to 1, 100 to 1, 1,000 to 1. Yeah, so if anybody can contribute anything, just, you know,
well, that's part, $500,
whatever you can, you know.
That's part of what this is about. That's part of what this is about today. And I'm going to ask you right now, I want to have you back on again.
Okay.
Soon. This is a story.
Anytime you need me.
This is a story we could take all day with. It's way involved. Way involved. But
too involved.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
I can't focus on it.
And, you know, it's a story that, at first blush, it is almost unbelievable.
Right.
But but anyway, we said to send donations to the campaign, it's ClintCurtis.com. It's that simple, right?
Right. Just go to the website, ClintCurtis.com. There's a donate button there. There's also an address if you prefer to send it by mail. Doesn't matter. Bush is looking at both of them, so just send it.
Yeah, you know? That's true. That's true. Yeah,
his wiretap on your phone. He's surely looking at the internet, you know.
Yeah, I know. You know, the big money doesn't always win, and if we can get your story out somehow, that's the important thing. And
right, once the story's out, I mean, this is a 35% Republican, 32% Democrat, and the rest are NPAs.
Okay.
So it's not an impossible race. It isn't an easy district to walk because it's very rural. The houses are spread out, you know.
Well, yeah. What is your major paper? The Sentinel?
Yes, the Sentinel.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. There's also Florida Today.
Okay.
Which is, you know, covers the Brevard and the part of Orange, I guess. There is the Orlando Sentinel. And then there are a lot of smaller papers. There's DeLand Beacon, and there's Oviedo Voice, and there's Seminole Chronicle. And so there's several little papers.
Yeah, kind of everything in the central eastern Florida coastline there.
Yeah.
Clint, I got to have you back on again. I simply have to. We
anytime
have to.
You want me.
this is a story, and I'm going to tell you right now.
Don't forget to invite Tom Feeney too, because We'd like to go head to head.
You're good at making jokes. I've invited Jeb Bush to come on the program, and I got that. Well, never mind. But I'd love to have Feeney on the program. That'd be a wonderful thing. I encourage everybody. You know, I know this story's big. It's huge, and until you start getting into it, it looks just too involved to even get involved with. But once you start digging into it and reading what went on and what's happening even now, it's just plain amazing. It really is. And Clint, I admire your courage. I really do. And I'm going to have you back on again just as soon as we possibly can. I'll contact you in a day or so, because we've got to go on with the story. We really do.
Sounds good. I'll be ready.
That's ClintCurtis.com. Now, listen, everybody, I mean this. You go there and donate some money to his cause today, because this is a huge cause. And not only would it put a good guy, an honest man, who by his very actions in this whole thing has proven that he's above reproach and honest as a day and long is long, it'll get somebody out of office who's a pariah to our government. So please think of it that way as well. Clint, thank you so much for being on with us today.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
My, oh my, oh my, oh my. Let me say that again. My, oh my. We've got a caller on the line. Who do we have?
Yeah, this is Alice from Humboldt.
Hi, Alice.
I wanted to ask Clint a question. I'm wondering if the election between him and Tom Finney is going to be on these crooked machines. If so, what chance do you have?
Well, you got that right. The machines, Alice, I know that you haven't always voted on machines, have you?
Oh, no.
And the good old paper ballots were just good enough, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. I do it ahead of time.
Yes. Well, we're going to have Brad Friedman on in just a few minutes. And
how did we let this happen?
Indeed. How did we let this happen? You know what, Alice? The sad thing is Washington's full of guys like Tom Feeney. It's you know, you could, if you went to the Congress and had to round up all the guys like Tom Feeney, you'd end up with a couple of pretty good sized busloads of them. I mean, there isn't any doubt about that. And what a shame.
This is an eye opener for sure.
It is. And you know, anybody that ever doubted, I've never doubted that shenanigans went on here during election. I've always just been waiting for that smoking gun that you know, that you could take to a jury, and the jury would take only 5 minutes to make up their mind that, yes, it's true, it happened. This may be it. This just might be it. Alice, thank you.
Well, I'm glad it came out.
I'm sure Brad will know this when he comes on in a few minutes, and we'll ask him that. I'm sure he'll know the answer to that question.
Okay.
Thanks for calling,
thank
Alice.
You.
Yeah, bye-bye. Well, we missed the news at the top of the hour. What Clint had to say, way more important than the news. We can do away with the news today, that's for sure. There'll still be news, that's for sure. I'm just blown away by this. I really am. I can't tell you how shocking this whole story is. I knew of this story, like many of you, and there are lots of layers to it. And I'm afraid, like so many other people, I had never peeled back all of the layers. But the farther you get into this, the more just completely infuriating and scary at the same time that it is. I worry for a guy like Clint Curtis. I do. You already heard about the Inspector General. But I worry about people like him. I've said for a long time, people think, well, we live in a civilized society, you know, these people are real civilized. They would never. Don't kid yourself at all. I've made the statement, and I've been chastised for saying it, that there is nothing these people wouldn't do to hold on to power. Nothing. I told I told somebody this morning, and I hope this little story doesn't upset you, but it's the best little story I can tell to prove what they're talking about, a cornered rat. I was brought up in a rural farm environment. And around farms, you know, the corn cribs and the oats bins and where you store your grain and all, there are rats. And farmers have cats and dogs and everything else. They catch the rats, but they don't catch them all. And you see them now and then. And especially at the big grain elevators where the farmers store their grain, you see rats all the time, you know. They're nothing to be afraid of. Not at all. And so as a child, I was never afraid of a rat. You'd look at one and say, boo, and it would run away. But I found out the hard way one time that when you got one cornered in the corner of a building, they'd come after you. Oh, yeah, they'd come after you with a vengeance. And that's what they mean by a cornered rat. And we have some politicians in this country right now who are indeed cornered rats. And they will use anything and everything at their disposal to keep from being thrown out of office and even moreover thrown into jail where some of them belong. So don't kid yourself that politics is the civil little game where you win and lose and everybody goes home and gets a new job or... No, it can get pretty doggone mean, and I think it would probably scare all of us if we knew what went on behind all of the scenes, especially with a man like Tom Feeney. There's a man that has no business whatsoever being in the Congress of the United States. None. Doesn't deserve the respect of his constituency, doesn't deserve one vote out of his constituency. It's laughable almost that this man is in the Congress. It's tragic that he's fooled the thousands upon thousands of people that he has fooled that voted him into office. And of course, he's a good friend and compadre of Jeb Bush. You knew the Bush name would be in there somewhere. And Jebby's first run for governor in Florida, Feeney ran with him as his nominee for lieutenant governor. So he's got some big political shoes. He doesn't mind using them. And the gall to go to a man like Clint Curtis, another trusted Republican, and ask him to do what he asked him to do, it's just overpowering that somebody would, but there you go. That's what we're dealing with. And it makes me just so damn angry, I just could chew nails. Oh, we're going to have Clint on again, and we're going to go through every little tiny step of this whole sordid mess. You heard what he said about the people in this country, in this company that he worked for, sending sensitive material to the Chinese, and yet you have also heard the right wing mass media, how many million times? Well, you know how that Clinton sold all of our secrets to the Chinese. How many times have you heard that? You've heard it over and over and over again. And here's a case of it happened right under the people's nose. And the guy gets fined $50 and ends up with his green card? Jeez. I'm just furious over this. I really am. And you go to Clint Curtis's website, clintcurtis.com. Of course, you got to go to Brad's blog and read all about it as well. There's nobody more well versed on it than he is, and we're going to have him on here in just not too very long, just a very few minutes. So let's see what time do we have here? Let's do that right now. we'll get on the horn and get Brad. Don't go anywhere.
Find you an informant, you will find you any gun. It's not there in secrecy, it's not in our strategy. I ain't got to justify V-I-C-T-O-R-Y. I'm living in a rogue nation. I'm living in a rogue nation. Plant your dreams in foreign soil. Pump some lead, then pump some oil. Fill up every tank and plane. Find a reason to start again. I ain't got to justify V-I-C-T-O-R-Y. I'm living in a rogue nation. I'm living in a rogue nation. From the sky. I ain't got to justify V-I-C-T-O-R-Y. I'm living in a rogue nation. 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 I ain't got to justify V-I-C-T-O-R-Y. I'm living in a rogue nation. I'm living in a rogue nation.
Oh, yeah. And me, hey, listen, you are living in a rogue nation. That last story was somewhat hair-raising, I know, to everybody. And I know we are going to have Clint back on as soon as we possibly can. I'll give him a call after the show today and see if we can arrange another interview just as soon as possible. As you know, he's very willing to come back and talk about this some more. One of the most fascinating stories I think I've ever heard. And we have a gentleman on the phone right now who knows a lot about this situation and a lot of other black box voting situations, travesties, I might add, across the country. We got Brad Friedman. Brad, welcome to the show.
Hey, guy. How are you?
Well, I at the moment, I'm pissed. I'm steamed.
You've been talking to Clint Curtis, have you?
You can't listen to Clint and not come away with that. Just furious. You just can't do it.
Well, tell me about it. It was both fury and terror for me, anyway, because I broke that story originally back in December of 2004, really just days after the 2004 election. And I mean, I'll tell you, It rocked my world, and it's been rocking it ever since. For the last year and a half, I've been reporting on his story, and it's just extraordinary, as you've noticed. It's extraordinary, and it's terrifying, especially when you deal with, and I believe you guys touched on this, the Raymond Lemmy situation, the inspector general who was found dead. I mean, there is just every aspect of that story is extraordinary, and it's... why I'm thrilled to see that Clint, who's been fighting this and trying to get the word out now for about 5 years, continues on and is now putting his money where his mouth is, so to speak, and, taking this guy on, taking Tom Feeney on to run for Congress down there. And, I hope your listeners will support that effort, because it's really, with the mainstream media largely ignoring that story, and I don't know how they can. But, the only way to help folks understand what's going on and what went on is if, you know, he can take this guy on in the general election coming up and get the word out about this extraordinary tale. But it needs money, as I think you've mentioned, because Tom Feeney, I'll tell you, Tom Feeney is the top-tier money raiser right up there with Tom DeLay and Jack Abramoff. And, you know, what people don't understand is that Tom Feeney was the third congressman, along with Tom DeLay and Bob Ney of Ohio, to go on those trips to Scotland to play golf at St. Andrews.
Oh, yeah.
Paid for by Jack Abramoff. So he is the top, you know, in the top tier of this corrupt Republican money machine, and he will spend millions, as he has done in the past. I mean, he spent millions in 2004 when he ran, and he ran unopposed. And in Florida, as you likely know, when you run unopposed, they don't even put your name on the ballot. So, you know, you can't have a write-in candidate defeat them. Nonetheless, this guy raised millions of dollars in 04. He's so far, I believe he's got about $650,000 in the bank. Feeney, not Clint.
Yeah.
$650,000 in the bank, and he's so cocky that he's given about $40,000 of it away to his GOP friends, including Catherine Harris.
Well, Katie Darlin needs all the help she can get.
Yeah, doesn't she? I know you want to keep her in the race. I don't blame you.
Yeah, I'd like to keep her in the race, all right.
But you know, he's received, Feeney has received tens of thousands of dollars from DeLay, from Abramoff, and indeed he still continues to get money, thousands of dollars, from this Yang Enterprises group, which Feeney has lied by saying he's had nothing to do with. His campaign headquarters, believe it or not, is still in the Yang building. and despite the fact that he said he's had nothing to do with them since he went to Congress in 2000.
The hubris and arrogance of these people is just so overwhelming. And I got to tell you, I couldn't be Clint Curtis. I couldn't be him. I'd be crazy by now.
I know he doesn't like being Clint Curtis in that regard. I mean, because he has had to put up with attacks on his life, death threats. He's had two of his dogs have been killed throughout this process. When I originally broke the story back in December of 2004, 3 hours after I posted it, I had gotten Clint, by the way, up to D.C. to speak with some congressmen about it. And while he was up there in D.C., 3 hours after I broke the story, someone had shot his dog down in Florida. That's the kind of folks you're dealing with.
Well, it is indeed. And, you know, I just mentioned on a program a while ago, I was talking about cornered rats. And, you know, people sometimes, when you say, you know how it is, when you bring up the hard-nosed truth, people don't like to hear it in the fashion that you have to explain it to them sometime. But I have said for a long time that there is nothing, and I mean nothing, these people wouldn't do to hang on to the power they have.
Unfortunately, I have to agree. And, you know, what we learn through the Clint Curtis story is we learn about that and the lengths to which they will go. But then going that next step, I mean, really, his story is just the tip of the iceberg, an object lesson, if you will, in what can be done and how easy it is to do it. In the meantime, I've been reporting over at bradblog.com since then and prior to then on the just disastrous state of our electoral system in this country. And that's the other reason why it's important to support Clint Curtis, because you know he makes that clear. His story makes that clear. But unfortunately, it's not the only story like it out there. I mean, we are seeing disasters and meltdowns in our electoral system right now around the country, and it is being woefully underreported by the corporate mainstream media, particularly the national media. Locally, the problems have been covered by you know newspapers and so forth, the problems that are coming up, but they're covering them as if they're only local problems. And the fact of the matter is, and I just, as a matter of fact, you can read the top story right now at bradblog.com. The fact of the matter is these problems that are going on everywhere in the nation. They're epidemic, and the national media is just not connecting the dots which are sitting right out there as being reported by the mainstream media, but they're not reporting, you know, they're not connecting the dots. So when they see a problem in Florida or somewhere else, they're acting as if it's a local problem instead of looking at the next county over or the next state over and realizing that the same damn thing is happening in every voting jurisdiction around the country.
Oh, absolutely. Somebody sent me a map today that I hadn't seen before. It's from a website called blatanttruth.org, and there's a map on there kind of just pointing out all the problems, not all, but many of the problems around the country, and pointing out which state it happened, what county, and what it was that happened with this. And it's obscene. It really is.
So, yeah, I mean, one of the stories, and I should also point out, by the way, that this really is not a partisan problem.
No.
Everyone is being affected by this, whether you're Republican or Democrat. We've got a situation down in Texas that I'm reporting on today. They recently had their primaries on March 7th, and it was such a disaster with these new electronic voting machines that are proliferating this year because of the Help America Vote Act, which kicks in this year. There was such a mess in Texas that you had Tarrant County, where Fort Worth is. They added 100,000 votes on Election Day, accidentally, I suppose. You had other counties. This fella, a Republican, a former Republican Supreme Court justice, a very conservative Supreme Court justice, filed an election contest because of these massive failures in the electronic systems all over the state. In one county, Winkler County, he had won. In 2002, he had won that county by 75%. In 2004, he won the county by 64%. This year, in the elections they just held on March 7th, he lost the county by 100%. He received zero votes. Now, you tell me, do we have a problem with our electoral system or not?
Yeah,
and,
man.
You know, and that's a Republican.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not a partisan issue at all. Yeah, I think I got somebody who wants to ask you a question. Hang on just a minute. Yeah, who do we have?
Brad, it's Dave, and the guy. I think you're talking to a man, Brad, that has not wanted to believe that even these cons would be stoop so low as to rig the voting machines. He's needed a smoking gun, and I think it's been just been handed to him. Am I right?
I wouldn't say I didn't want to believe it. I said I'm the kind of guy that if I were an attorney, if I were a prosecutor, I'd have to have so much material that I could count on the jury coming back in 5 minutes with a guilty verdict. That's the kind of guy I am. But no, it's not that I've ever doubted this.
Well, listen, I you know, when I first reported Clint's story, one of the things he said to me after I talked to him, and you know, about you know, the comments we were getting back at Brad Blog and elsewhere about it. You know, I said, well, you know, some people are skeptical of your story. And he said, good, they should be skeptical. I want them to be skeptical because perhaps that means they'll go out, they'll try to disprove what I'm saying, and they will find additional information that will prove what I'm saying in truth. And, you know, I'm like you, Guy, in that I am too skeptical. And it's not so much that there's a smoking gun, frankly, that the elections have been rigged in 2004. The point to me is that they can be rigged, and when we lose, and therefore we lose confidence in the election system, and when we lose confidence in the election system, we no longer have a democracy. I mean, it was proven down in Florida, as a matter of fact, recently in December of 2005, a very big case that did make national headlines, where the election director down there, Ion Sancho, had the gall to allow some computer security professionals to come in and hack the Diebold machines. They said they could do it. He said, no, I don't think you can. They came in. They did a mock election down there, and they were able to flip the results of a mock election, completely flip the results without leaving a trace behind. And because it's Florida, you wouldn't even be allowed to go back and count. And mind you, they were using paper ballots. This was on an optical scan, a Diebold optical scan machine, where you fill in the little bubble on your ballot, and then the ballot runs through a counter and counts it. It was a simple yes or no question. Can Diebold machines be hacked via their memory cards? 6 people voted no. 2 people voted yes, the security professionals. And when they counted those paper ballots, the Diebold tabulator reported 1 no, 7 yes. It completely flipped the results. And they had the results there on paper. If they were allowed to count them by hand, they would have found out what the true result was. But Florida law now disallows any ballot to be counted manually by hand if it has already been counted by a machine.
Well, I am such a cynic that, we've got this situation going on right now with Catherine Harris. Mm-hmm. The Republicans want her out in the worst way. They really, really want her out of this race.
Yeah.
And they've done nothing to support her. Nothing. But they're as bad as they want her out of this race. They're not pushing real hard, and they're not being real vocal about it. And I am so cynical that I believe that they don't dare push her too hard. I really believe that she's the type of person that would do it, is spill the beans on what happened, what she knows. And I think
I hope they keep pushing her, because, I believe you might be right. I mean, ethics have never been the top order of business for Catherine Harris, that's for sure. Nor for Jeb Bush, who did run with Tom Feeney. I should add, Feeney was his lieutenant governor ticket partner in 1994 down there in Florida, the first time Jeb ran and lost. So he was not good luck for Jeb Bush, but he's very closely attached to the Bush family. And, I mean, he will do anything to protect those guys. It's terrifying. But as I say, it's a much greater problem than that I've been ringing alarm bells over at bradblog.com now for as long as I could. I will continue to do so until folks realize that democracy itself is at stake. And if people don't educate themselves about what's going on here with this system that is being gamed in every jurisdiction in the country now because of these electronic voting machines, which have been proven to be hackable, which are unsecure, which are not accurate, which are failing now time and time again. We've had 2 primaries so far this year in Illinois and Texas. Both have been unmitigated disasters. Both have used different, in Illinois, it's the Sequoia voting systems is the vendor they use. Down in Texas, it's the ESNS, which I sort of refer to as Diebold's evil twin.
Yes.
ESNS and Hart InterCivic. In both cases, the machines failed epidemically across the state, and now we've got 48 more primaries and 1 general election still to go this year. And again, as I'm reporting today at bradblog.com, ESNS, the Texas Secretary of State office just put out a note to all election directors across the state of Texas, because they've got a runoff election coming up in about 2 weeks, has sent a note alerting them to create emergency paper ballots, to secure boxes to store them in, and to hire additional clerks, county clerks, to help count these votes, because the ESNS company has failed to deliver ballots, to deliver machinery, hardware for these elections. And there is a complete meltdown, and that's not the only state where this is now happening with ESNS. They are failing everywhere.
Well, and as I understand it, I believe the figure is somewhere around 80% of all the votes in the country are counted by Diebold and ESNS.
That's correct. Between the two of them, they count more than 80% of America's votes right now. And Diebold gets a lot of the bad press, deservedly, because their CEO. It's an Ohio company, and their CEO had sent out a fundraising letter to Republicans prior to the 2004 election, promising to deliver the state of Ohio to George W. Bush. So that's given them a lot of press. But the fact of the matter is, ESNS machines are as poorly designed, fail as often, and the company itself is as right-leaning as Diebold was.
And well, frankly, they have a very incestuous relationship, do they not?
They do. In fact, two different brothers run both companies, the Yurosevich brothers.
Hmm.
So they're very closely aligned. And, you know, the bottom line is no matter who they are, and no matter if they're aligned with Republicans or anybody else, the problem here is that we've got private companies running our public elections, and they are using secret software to do it that nobody is allowed to inspect. And it's a completely secret process. It's a completely counter to our values of openness and transparency in democracy. And, you know, it's a very dangerous situation, which thankfully, by the way, even Republicans are now beginning to notice, because I had mentioned Illinois and the Sequoia Voting Systems Company. They were recently purchased by a Venezuelan firm, a Venezuelan firm by the name of Smartmatic. Well, it turns out that Smartmatic has ties to Hugo Chavez.
Oh.
All of a sudden, you've got the wingnuts out there running around yelling, "This is an outrage! You know, Hugo Chavez is controlling our elections." Well, that's the danger. It doesn't matter whether it's Hugo Chavez or Wally O'Dell at CEO at Diebold or anywhere else. You don't want public companies running our private companies running our public elections and doing so without any means of oversight and in complete secret. I can't ring the alarm bell any louder, can I?
No, I think not. I didn't know before I started delving into this situation that I spoke to Clint about it, that no one other than these machine vendors can even examine the source codes or the computer programming instructions. I didn't realize they were that tightly held.
Oh, yeah, they've been able to get dispensation to allow them to keep their software somehow as a trade secret, the software that, you know, runs our public democracy. So, you know, forget citizens actually looking at the source code just to see how it works. Even the election officials are not allowed to look at the source code. And in states that have required openness of the source code, the voting machine companies have fought it tooth and nail. And example out in North Carolina, Diebold recently pulled out of the state entirely because the state passed a law requiring all source code for these programs to be turned over to the state for inspection, and Diebold refused to do it. And this is a state, North Carolina, who has some experience in the dangers of electronic voting, because back in 2004, on a single machine alone in Carteret County, North Carolina, they completely lost about 4,500 votes on an electronic voting machine that was supposed to store 10,000 votes. It turns out it was only stored 3,000 votes. And so 4,500 votes were lost in their entirety on a single machine in a single county in Carteret County, North Carolina. So they have some concerns about electronic voting out there, and, you know, some great patriots out there in that state have been, you know, fighting this and fighting to open up the process so that people, you know, can take a look at what the hell is going on. And whenever that happens, the voting machine companies, for whatever reason you decide, you know, are fighting that tooth and nail. They don't want anyone to see how American votes are actually counted.
Absolutely not. And, you know, Brad, years ago, here's something I don't understand. They're wanting to privatize this, have private companies do the public elections now. Many years ago, I worked for a company that had some government contracts. And every day when I went to work, I had a badge I had to show with a picture ID, and we all had to have background checks and all that. And it wasn't anything nearly as sensitive as our elections. And we find that companies like Diebold, for example, has got convicted felons as consultants. They've had one of the companies that was bought out by Diebold, Jeff Dean, who was senior vice president of Global Election System. He'd been convicted of 23 counts of a felony in the first degree, and yet he was retained on by Diebold. It seems that the
of computer fraud, actually.
Yeah. I'm amazed by that. I really am.
No one is minding the store. No one. And we are, you know, sending out men and women around the world ostensibly under this theory of spreading democracy around the globe. But the fact of the matter is nobody is keeping an eye on our democracy here back home. Actually, I should not say nobody, because there are thousands, if not millions, really, of folks, of citizens, private citizens and patriots who are trying to raise awareness, who are, you know, making noise with their secretaries of state, with their boards of election, who are trying to say, you know, no, we're not going to stand for this. This is our democracy, and the people right now are our only hope, because both political parties have been delinquent in doing anything about this. The mainstream media has been beyond delinquent in doing anything about this. They've, you know, refused by and large to investigate these topics and report on them really at all. Now, that's beginning to change a little bit, but it's, you know, too little too late, certainly, for the 2006 election. So it's really, you know, it's been up to the people to educate themselves, to get out there, to make noise, to pick up the phone, to call their election officials and ask them what the hell is going on, to make sure that they are there on election day with video cameras, taping what's going on, to write letters to the editor, to call the media, to call the officials, and to make noise about this, because otherwise, you know, this is going to be pushed under the carpet along with, you know, so much else that is going on. But you can argue about issues and policy and you know, the Iraq war and everything else all you want. But ultimately, if you can't vote out the people who are running the policies that you don't like, we are screwed. So even the progressive blogosphere, I'm still amazed at many of the big-time bloggers in the progressive blogosphere who are not covering this matter, and they're out there bickering about candidates and issues and everything else, and they're not realizing none of it matters a damn if you can't have confidence in an electoral system that actually works.
No, not if you could have God himself as a candidate and he could get beat. It doesn't matter. And, you know, that was a question I have for you. Why do you think, I think this is a gigantic story. Why do you think the mainstream media has just almost totally ignored it?
You know, it's very difficult to say. There's a number of reasons, and I get asked that all the time. There's a number of reasons. At first, anyway, after the 2004 election, the fact that John Kerry rolled over on November 3rd, refused to challenge the results, left a lot of folks in the media saying, well, if John Kerry's not going to care about it, the man who has the most to lose here, then, you know, we won't either. Now, the problem with that sort of thinking was that, John Kerry doesn't have the most to lose. We do. The Americans do. You know, that election was not about John Kerry. That election was about America. And B, the media should not be taking their cues, you know, their assignments from politicians. It's as if unless one of the two major parties says anything about these things, the media is by and large not going to bother to go out and report on it, as if they take their assignments from them, which is insane. You know, they are the fourth estate. They are working for us, the people, not for the politicians. But I'm afraid they lost touch with that long ago. That's one reason. Another reason, I think, because, you know, looking at this means that, you know, they're going to have to go up against some very powerful people. And we've seen that the media has been very reluctant to report on stories that might not bode well and might not put the Republicans in a very good light. And the way the Republicans, and it has been Republicans by and large, who have been gaming this system, you know, the way they'll end up looking is not very good here, and it's a lot easier to report on the safer stories, because, you know, all of these reporters out there, as Bush once said, have to put food on their families.
That's right.
So they want to hang on to their jobs. They want to play it safe. And then ultimately, I've spoken with a lot of reporters, particularly after when I broke the Clint Curtis story. I talked to everyone in the world contacted me from 60 Minutes to AP to CNN to Newsweek. They were all interested in the story. And to a man or woman, almost all of those reporters who I spoke to who wanted to do stories on this ultimately were told by their editors that, oh, we don't want to touch it. It's too political. It's too much of a hot potato. And, you know, this was not long after the Rathergate incident. This was in a political climate where you just did not criticize the George W. Bush administration.
And there's no cleanness involved either.
There's no what?
No cleanness involved.
Cleanness?
Cleanness. C-L-E. that's an inside joke with some of my listeners. We're talking about Clinton's penis, actually.
I see.
The cleanness.
Okay.
No sex involved.
That's true. not that we know of, although there's some interesting background on Tom Feeney that reporters can dig into if they want, concerning a staffer of his who once worked for Hooters, but I'll leave that to someone else to look into. I've got enough problems these days.
Well, I'll tell you, Feeney's a guy, you know, having lived in Florida for quite a while, Feeney's a guy that just, you know, I just bristle every time I see him. He's the most outrageously arrogant guy I think I've ever seen, maybe next to Tom DeLay. I don't know, but awfully close. And
he was right up there. He was named as one of the 13 most corrupt members of Congress by Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. That's the group that wrote the ethics complaints against Tom.
Oh, yeah. We had Melanie on yesterday, I think it was.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
So she knows that she knows this story, and she knows who Tom Feeney is. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Feeney was like number three in the Congress behind Tom DeLay and Duke Cunningham.
Yeah.
Both of whom are gone, and that, you know, sort of puts Feeney right up there on top. And yet he seems to sneak under the radar, which really amazes me, because, you know, most people know that Tom DeLay and Bob Ney, for example, went on those golfing junkets to Scotland. But almost no one seems to understand that Tom Feeney was on one of them as well.
Yeah, I'm trying to think how Feeney. I remember something about Feeney passing that off as I'm trying to think how that went. He said that the National Center for Public Research or something actually paid for it, is how he explained it. But it turned out it was paid for by Jack Abramoff, and everybody said, "Well, okay." I mean, that was the end of it.
Well, that you know, that's the excuse I believe that both DeLay and Ney gave as well. Abramoff fooled us. They made us think that, you know, it was being paid for by a policy group, not a lobbyist or something like that. But Feeney continues to do that. He continues to take trips paid for by lobbyists, and he went on another one with he and his wife, a very expensive trip to West Palm Beach. He went to South Korea, which is notable given the Chinese aspects of the story that I believe you guys had talked about.
Indeed. Indeed it is.
It was paid for by, guess who? Foreign agents.
Yes.
Which is also illegal. Nonetheless, somehow or another, he gets to skate by with it. I mean, in no small part, frankly, because there is no ethics commission anymore in the House. That's been, you know, pretty much ground to a halt because they can't agree on rules there, and the Republicans are keeping anything from moving forward.
Well, and look what they're trying to do with that now. They're trying to, you know, well, look here, Mr. and Mrs. Joe American, we're going to change these rules next December or January after the election. We're going to do it.
By the way, Tom Feeney voted. You may recall what they ended up calling the DeLay rule. Tom DeLay tried to change the rules in the House to keep indicted officials from having to step down. And that's the rule that they put in place during the Clinton era when they took over the House. Now that they're the ones who are being indicted, they tried to change those rules, and Tom Feeney voted for that rule. He wanted to change the rules so that if you're indicted, you don't have to step down. You can, you know, continue going. So he was a supporter of that. He is just, you know, one point after another. As I've been looking into the story over the past year and a half, I'm trying to find holes in the story. So far, I've been unable to find a hole in Clint Curtis's story, but I find hole after hole, demonstrable lie after demonstrable lie in what Clint Curtis has to, I'm sorry, in what Tom Feeney has to say, and in what the company they both worked for, Yang Enterprises, has to say. Every time they come out with something, it's easy to disprove. I mean, Feeney likes to point to the Florida Ethics Commission that cleared him of ethics charges many years ago on some of these matters. Well, it was, if I've got my numbers right, I believe it was a 7-person commission. 4 of them had been appointed by Tom Feeney himself, and the other 2 had been appointed by Jeb Bush. So that's the commission that cleared him. And the Palm Beach Post later on found out that they didn't interview the folks who made the complaints, and Tom Feeney failed to supply emails and communications to the Ethics Commission against state law, and some of those emails, in fact, confirmed exactly what the charges were. So he'll try to get away with anything he can. Meanwhile, he calls Clint Curtis a liar. I can't remember the exact term he uses, but I don't know if Clint pointed this out when he was on. Clint has passed a polygraph test.
Yeah. Brad, I can't find anything in Clint Curtis's past that takes anything away from his good character. I can't find anything. Can you?
Well, except for the fact that he was once a Republican.
Well, okay.
But I kid, because the fact of the matter is, you know, and a lot of people have tried to suggest that I'm a partisan. You know, I didn't vote for John Kerry in 2004. I don't cover issues of you know, partisan issues. I cover issues of not right and left, but issues of right and wrong. And, you know, there are still a lot of good Republicans out there and intellectually honest conservatives, real ones, real conservatives, not these phony fake conservatives like George Bush and his friends, you know, who are damn ticked off at the way this bunch of crooks has hijacked not just the Republican Party, but the conservative movement. So I never take it out on you know, folks who identify themselves in general as Republicans, because there's a lot of good Americans out there. And unlike Republicans, the ones who have taken over the party, you know, I think having at least 2 parties is good for this country. And a lot of these, you know, these guys, of course, like to see, you know, a one-party rule.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a partisan Democrat. I make no bones about that. None whatsoever. But I have maintained since day one that this Bush administration, this crowd, are something other. They are not Republicans. And I would never, as partisan as I am, I would never want the Democrats to have the iron-fisted control that the Republicans have right now. I think we need the checks and balances. I think we need the parties to be, you know, to keep each other straight. There's thieves in both parties. The fact that they've got such an iron-fisted control over the Republican Party right now is really astonishing.
Well, yeah. I mean, America is about debate, and in theory, you know, about open debate on all of these issues. And in theory, when you've got different sides to the matter, and frankly, I'd love to see an end to the two-party duopoly. I'd love to see many more parties out there. But in any case, in theory, you know, you have healthy debate about issues, and ultimately you end up on not necessarily a compromise, but you end up on something that has the best of all worlds, in theory. So to that end, yeah, I don't think there should be any one party that has the sort of unchecked power that we're seeing right now. That is certainly not good for our country. And I got to tell you, We're seeing that right now in spades, and we're seeing a dangerous administration violating our very core American values and our very American Constitution, and it goes far above and beyond partisanship and parties right now, which is why you're beginning to see in this latest Fox News poll that put Bush's approval rating at 33%, a 20% slip amongst Republicans alone,
right,
in support of George W. Bush.
Well, so, I've said from the beginning, knowing the Bushes and knowing a lot about them then, and the people that knew he was bringing with him into office, I feared that they would be the most corrupt and incompetent administration in their nation's history, and they haven't disappointed me one bit.
Well, I think, again, to quote Bush, misunderestimated that in many ways.
I did, too.
I really didn't think, you know, and I think that a lot of people, you know, the concern was, well, he'll be like Reagan, and, you know, someone who does not do what Democrats want, has policies that differ. I don't think in my wildest nightmares I could ever imagine that we would be sitting here in 2006 with a so-called president who I don't believe was legitimately elected, most likely, both times, certainly in 2000, most likely in 2004. And, you know, we're debating whether things like torture, secret prisons, spying on Americans without warrant, you know, whether we should be doing these things. I mean, this is... What kind of country
is this? Oh, yeah. And you know, I mentioned a week or two ago, I did a program about, you know, I've followed politics for a long time. I think I'm probably a lot older than you are. And my first campaign that I really worked hard in was the Kennedy campaign. And I didn't like certain candidates, and I didn't like certain presidents and so forth. But this is the first administration in my lifetime that the word incompetence has been coming up all the time. I mean, you know, you didn't like this guy or that guy, but you didn't think, well, you know, he's just an incompetent fool. You didn't say that about people, but it's there in front of your face now, and you can't avoid it.
Well, I tell you, I was talking with someone about this last night, and in one respect, if all we had here was incompetence and cronyism and to a certain extent corruption, if that's all that we had going here, and we could all sit around quietly and wait for him to be voted out of office for his incompetency, corruption, and cronyism, then that would be fine. But the point of the matter is we don't know whether we can remove them from office, and the incompetency is almost the least of our concern.
Yes.
This goes beyond incompetency when you've got, a president, I have trouble even saying that word about him, but when you've got George W. Bush saying out loud that, yes, I admit that I broke the Foreign Intelligence Services Act 30 times. I'm proud of it. I'm going to keep doing it. My administration has outed for the first time in the history of the country a covert CIA operative, and they're proud of it. I mean, this was not incompetency. This is, you know, purposeful decisions that, you know, specifically say, I don't give a damn about the rule of law. I don't give a damn about the United States Constitution. I am going to do what I want. I'm going to have unchecked powers because I'm the president, and I can do whatever I want.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And, you know, that goes beyond incompetency. Now we're dealing with tyranny.
Tyranny?
And real
absolutely. And I tell you what, I live in fear. I live in fear today that they're going to light up the skies over the Middle East with terrible weapons. I mean, I think these people would actually do it.
I put nothing by them, and that is why... Look, even in the best of all cases, let's say I'm completely out of my mind and our electoral system is terrific and there's nothing to worry about, and come 2008, we'll just vote in someone else and Bush will move along and everything will be fine. It won't be fine. That's a best-case scenario, but it won't be fine, because what we've done here is we have established that these sorts of tyrannical policies are okay, which then in turn means the next guy or girl who comes along who wants to further these policies can go ahead and do so, because exactly. We've accepted it. Well, it's okay to have, to torture perceived political enemies in secret prisons around the world. What's wrong with torturing those enemies here in secret prisons in the United States?
Exactly.
And it gets worse and worse. So unless these guys are held accountable, and unless they can't just be removed, from office come 2008. They need to be held accountable. They need to be punished. They need to be shamed. Because if we don't push back against this, it is only going to get worse.
That's right. We need a very, very serious statement about this. We do. We got to make a point. Brad, it's been great to have you on the program today. I like to reserve the right to have you back on again some of these days soon.
I'm happy to do so anytime. I really appreciate you having both myself on and Clint Curtis on. And I'm going to remind people again to go to ClintCurtis.com
yes.
to help support his candidacy down there, no matter if you're in Florida or elsewhere. But thanks for having me on, and thank you, Guy, for what you're doing and fighting to make noise, no matter what you have to do, no matter what obstacles you have to overcome, to keep spreading the word and to keep making noise about what the hell is going on in our once great country.
And your website is...
My website is bradblog.com.
I think you didn't let anybody that didn't already know that. But anyway, we had to do it. Thank you, Brad.
Thanks, Guy. Talk to you later.
Well, an interesting conversation, an interesting day here on the Guy James Show. I don't know what I'm going to do this evening. I really don't. I've got to get a hold of Clint Curtis, and I've got to talk to him some more. I am just more frustrated than I think I've ever been. Here's a good man that's got a clean-as-a-whistle past, known as being an honest and upright and straightforward, straight arrow, a former Republican. Probably still thinks in the terms of the good old fashioned Republican values, the way they used to be, when the Republican Party was an honorable party. Here's a man that has a story to tell that is the most scandalous thing possibly that's ever happened in political life in this country. And yet he's been shunned by the mainstream media. Why doesn't Sean Hannity have him on the program? I know Clint would do it. Why doesn't O'Reilly have him on? I know Clint would go on, because they're afraid of the truth. They're afraid that this story has some real legs, and the more they can keep it down, the better. Well, I promise you we won't keep it down. I thank some of you for asking that we have Clint on the program. I knew of his situation. I didn't know all the details I know now. And I'll tell you, the details are disturbing. And I suggest you find out as much as you can about this. We are going to make as much noise about it as we can. We will not let this rest. We have some serious criminals in our government, and we've got to do something about it. We absolutely must, for the good of our country. If we're true Americans, we can't sit by and let things like this go. We simply cannot. I'm so glad so many of you joined the program today. I can tell we've got a large audience today, and I knew we would, because of the fact of the subject matter. And I know many of you are passionate about that subject matter, as you well should be. And I promised, as host of this program, to do a better job on that subject in the future. I'm frightened by what I heard today. I really am, that things could go to this length and the American public could sit by and say, oh, well. And that the people we really count on to put out the truth, the fourth column, the American media, hasn't come forth with the story and investigated it to the hilt and put it in front of the public and allowed the public to decide whether they think it's true or not. I think they're obligated to do that. Well, anyway, I do want to thank you for being with us today. Hope you found the show interesting. I sure did. Very insightful. And, as always, I do want to remind you, if you can, go to GuyJamesShow.com and help support this program. We depend on you. And also go to ClintCurtis.com and throw a couple of bucks his way. Help him along defeat this, well, I won't say, feeny. As always, you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Have a great night. We'll see you tomorrow.